So this year, as many of you know, but our newer people may not know, we've been studying the Four Noble Truths. And so over the past months, we've been working our way through the Eightfold Path. And as we mentioned before, the Eightfold Path addresses three major aspects of our lives and our spiritual practice. The wisdom aspect, the conduct aspect, and the mental development or mind training aspect, which is called bhavana in Pali. And we've just finished working with the conduct aspect, wise speech and wise action and wise livelihood. And so this month we'll begin the final aspect, the mind training or mental development aspect. And this part of the path deals with our formal meditation, but it's also something that we can really apply in many, many ways in our daily lives. So as we explore this part of the path over the next couple of months, I'd really encourage you to think about both your practice on the cushion and the mindfulness that you bring to your daily lives and daily activities. Now, some of you might be wondering why this mind training meditation section of the path comes last. It kind of seems like maybe we should talk about meditation first, since we really need these meditation techniques to help develop wise view and wise intention, as well as wise action. And in the West here, that's where we usually start. We learn about meditation. And then we start to become more familiar with the teachings. And it's really reasonable to wonder about this, and this is something that I have wondered about too. But after some reflection, I've really started to appreciate why things are organized this way. Because after we've spent this time learning about the first three noble truths and going over these first two aspects of the Eightfold Path, the wise understanding and wise action, we have thought about this and practiced with this enough to really appreciate the reason we're doing our meditation practice, which is to free the mind from greed, hatred, and delusion, and all the trouble and pain that come with them. And so this mental training really is presented in that framework and that context. And if we put it right in the beginning, we might not really have such a full understanding of that context. So the mental development part of the Eightfold Path has three elements: right or wise effort, right or wise mindfulness, and right or wise concentration. And for these particular aspects of the path, I really prefer the word wise to the word right. You know, right tends to imply that there's one right way to do things. But in fact, the way that we imply effort and mindfulness and concentration can vary quite a bit depending on the situation we're in. And so the techniques we might use at one time might be a little different than the techniques we might use at another time. So for me, wise captures that the best. And this month our focus is on wise effort. So one of the definitions of wise effort is to encourage and cultivate wholesome mind states while discouraging unwholesome mind states. And in the suttas, it talks about the four wise efforts or four right exertions. And these are preventing unwholesome mind states from arising, abandoning unwholesome mind states once they've arisen, developing wholesome mind states that have not yet arisen, and maintaining wholesome mind states once they have arisen. So you might think of this as a sort of a framework that lays out the purpose for our mind training. And so as I was kind of mentioning earlier, if you think about what we've talked about earlier this year, about the third noble truth, of freeing ourselves from greed, hatred, and delusion, about wise understanding and wise intention as part of the Eightfold Path. You can see this framework of cultivating the good and abandoning the unwholesome is really consistent with that teaching. So the Third Noble Truth talks about how we practice to free the mind from painful states of greed, hate, and delusion, and that we really can free the mind. Wise understanding emphasizes developing the wisdom that really frees the mind, understanding impermanence, suffering, not self, understanding that our actions do have consequences and unwholesome actions are going to lead us to more suffering. And so wise intention emphasizes developing the intentions of renunciation or abandoning what's unhelpful and unskillful, of developing goodwill, of having intentions of harmlessness. So this effort to cultivate the good and abandon the unskillful is really in line with the teachings we've been studying all year, really in line with the message of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And it really makes a lot of sense as a kind of broad, overarching framework or objective. Wanting to develop beneficial and hopeful, help wholesome mental qualities and discourage hatred, greed, and delusion, and all of those relatives that can be part of that. So we might ask ourselves then, what are these wholesome mental qualities that we want to encourage and develop? For some good examples of these, we can go back to the paramis that we studied last year. Generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, equanimity. We might also consider qualities that are part of the seven factors of enlightenment: mindfulness, investigation of the Dhamma, energy, rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. Or the five spiritual faculties: faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So we have a lot of sense of what these wholesome qualities may be. And I think the unwholesome ones too, well, those, they're probably all too familiar to all of us. We know them pretty well. Greed, hatred, and delusion, and all the different aspects that come along with those, like sort of irritation and all of that kind of stuff. And another good list of unwholesome mind states would be the five hindrances: craving, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. And so with wise effort, as best we are able, we make the effort to prevent unwholesome states from arising, abandoning unwholesome states once they have arisen, developing wholesome states that have not yet arisen, and maintaining wholesome states once they have arisen. And you might think of the other two aspects of this part of the path, wise mindfulness and wise concentration, as the tools that we use to help carry out these four wise efforts. And I'm not going to talk about this so much today because we're going to cover them in a lot of detail in the next months, but that might be a way of thinking about this. Our big objective is really to purify the mind and encourage these wholesome states, and we use mindfulness and concentration to help us to do that. So this all seems straightforward enough, you know, it kind of makes sense. And yet I think, as we all know, when it comes to actually putting wise effort into practice, not so easy. And it's really, really easy to get confused about just what this is. To start off with, we might feel some resistance to even thinking about wise effort in terms of those four great efforts. And I know that I felt that way myself. Early in my practice, I was more interested in having pleasant meditation experiences than in really focusing on cultivating the good. And, you know, I didn't really understand so much what the path was all about. And then, too, I think I had, and we often have that kind of resistance that's kind of similar to the resistance we sometimes feel about renunciation or about discussions of ethical conduct. You know, it's not that we don't value kindness and non-harming, but it's more that the idea of cultivating the good and abandoning the bad can feel like this really tense and anxious effort to be good, to always be worrying about, am I being good enough? Am I being good enough? Am I doing everything right? Or it can also feel like this is just one more standard that we're never going to be able to quite live up to. One more standard to judge ourselves by and find ourselves wanting. And that can be really discouraging and depressing and cause us not to really want to do our practice or think about these aspects of practice. And then, too, the instructions we get about meditation can be confusing and contradictory. You know, on the one hand, we're often told that in our meditation practice, we should bring a non-judgmental awareness to whatever's going on in our mind and body. But on the other hand, these teachings about the four right efforts encourage us to cultivate the good and abandon the unskillful. And this is really easy to interpret as making the effort to make good mind states happen and get rid of the bad mind states. And it's not surprising that we think of it that way. So since we have so much of that kind of training that makes us feel like we ought to be in control, we ought to be able to fix what's bad, we ought to be able to make good things happen, we ought to be able to do what we need to do to have it go the way we want it to go. So with these kind of two different instructions, what are we supposed to do? It can be pretty darn confusing. So one thing that we really need to realize is that while the aspiration might be to cultivate the good and abandon the unwholesome, getting rid of and fixing and making things happen isn't really the kind of effort that is needed. And in fact, if we're coming at it with that kind of mind state and strategy, it really goes against the wisdom that we're hoping to cultivate. So it's counterproductive. For example, if we're caught up in wanting one mind state to arise and wanting to get rid of another one, what are we feeling? Desire and aversion. There they are right there, you know. And it doesn't matter if, you know, it's wanting some beautiful mind state or wanting to get rid of our anger. Desire and aversion for that are not so much different from desire for chocolate and aversion to broccoli. I mean, desire and aversion. And when we think we can make these different mind states come and go through the force of our will, that's also delusion. We're not understanding dependent origination. We're not understanding how there are a whole different range of conditions that cause these different mind states to arise in the mind. Causes and conditions that we might not even recognize. And when we're caught up in the idea of making ourselves into a new and better version of me, full of all these wholesome mind states, free of all these unwholesome ones, you know, this sort of perfect meditator, we can get stuck in self-view and becoming. So we just really solidify this idea of me as this me that I want to be that is so perfect and pure and good. So none of these are the direction that we really want to be going. You know, we want to be going to less desire, less aversion, less sense of self. So, you know, it's counterproductive. And yet we often really aren't able to realize that until we start to go in those directions, and then we feel the pain of those things. But then on the other hand, if we have the idea that non-judgmental awareness means that we can just kind of check our discernment at the door and anything goes, that's not very wise either. So non-judgmental doesn't mean this sort of anything goes kind of attitude, but it's more of a kind of awareness that's really focused on seeing and understanding rather than fixing or getting rid of this or that. So this non-judgmental awareness doesn't think this shouldn't be here. I'm a bad person because this thing is here. It's really a wisdom and understanding. There's this understanding that whatever in the mind has come up in the mind has come up out of causes and conditions. It's not really me or mine or what I am. So there isn't this sense of self-blame. But at the same time, this awareness definitely can see this is painful. This is suffering. This is delusion. It's not true. It's not helpful. So there's plenty of discernment there. We can see what is wholesome and we can see what is not wholesome. So there's that kind of, if you would like to call judgment, there's that is there. But not the kind of painful judgment that often arises when we make everything that comes up in the mind all about us and a judgment on us. So when we think about wise effort, we need to think about it a little bit differently than we might if we just fall into our habitual patterns of, you know, fixing, getting rid of, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when it comes to abandoning unskillful qualities, the teachings suggest several different methods we can use depending on what the unskillful quality is like and how it presents itself. So kind of this here is a sort of illustration of it's not right in the sense of one way to do it, but more wise in the sense of there can be a variety of ways depending on the situation. So the first one is seeing this unskillful quality, bringing mindfulness to it. So you can really see it as it is. And this alone, just bringing mindfulness to this unwholesome or difficult mind state, this alone really changes things. Because when we bring mindfulness to our anger or our craving or whatever it is that happens to be present, instead of that particular emotion or mind state being the predominant thing, mindfulness really comes to the fore. So we're not stuck in that painful mind state. We're observing it, we're understanding it, we're seeing it. And that really is all the difference. You know, the mindfulness is a wholesome mind state. So we're really kind of bringing in something wholesome. So we're not stuck in something that's painful and unwholesome. And when we bring mindfulness to our anger or craving or doubt, we see that this mind state is painful. We see that we're suffering. And we can see how a lot of times this getting stuck here arises from delusion. We're not seeing things clearly. If we're caught up in thinking this shouldn't be here, thinking it's always going to be this way, or thinking it's all about me, you know, that's a formula for suffering. We're going to have trouble. So we bring mindfulness and we see this delusion. And as we understand more and more about these difficult mind states and see their drawbacks, gradually they lose their power over us and we begin to naturally let go. And this can happen, you know, in a moment, with the arising of this mind state in a moment. It also can happen very gradually over time as we feel less and less caught by these difficult mind states. It's not something that happens boom overnight, it's gone forever, no problem anymore. But we do gradually find that we are less troubled by them. And I think a lot of us who have been practicing for a while, we see that that really is true. And along with this bringing of mindfulness, tolerating is another part of this process. You know, patiently being with a difficult mind state or quality without acting it out. And when we do this, we see that it's impermanent, like everything else. It's not lasting forever. It starts to change, it ends, something else comes up. And it's really good to know this, to know that these difficult mind states or painful or discomfortable things, they don't last forever. In this way, we can let them come and go without being so overwhelmed by them. And then another thing we can do is use a skillful quality to counter an unskillful one. In a way, bringing mindfulness is a part of that. But also another way to do this is maybe bringing compassion. If you're feeling caught up in anger, bringing loving kindness. If you're suffering because of some particular difficult emotion, stopping for a moment and offering yourself metta can be a good way to change things. Another way we can do that too is stopping and perhaps returning just to the breath or to sound or something like that, sort of taking a break. Restraining is another thing we can use, guarding ourselves from things that cause these unskillful qualities arise, you know, avoiding triggers. And this is something that may be especially helpful in our daily life. Avoiding. Staying away from situations that are more than we can handle and we know that will lead to unskillful behavior. Again, this is something that really is helpful in daily life, but also in the sense of when we're on the cushion, as I was mentioning before, like bringing the mind away from what is really, really difficult, backing away and taking a break if it's too much for us. Focusing on the breath, maybe. And then there is what is referred to as destroying, which is really sort of from a conscious effort saying, okay, I'm not gonna let the mind be on this anymore. And sometimes we need to do this if there's this very, very persistent thing. We just have to say, okay, I'm not going to get involved with this. Every time it comes up, distract ourselves. That's not the ideal thing, but if it's just so much we really got to get out of it, maybe that will work. And then there is the developing and cultivating skillful qualities. So they become more and more dominant. And when they're more dominant in the mind, then these more unskillful ones, they don't have as much power. They don't arise as much. And deciding which of these methods is best for you in a particular situation is really kind of experiment. You need to see for yourself, try this, try that. You know, maybe you'll get it wrong. No problem. Try something else. Generally, bringing mindfulness to the mental quality and staying with it as you see it change and pass are the first things to try, especially when we're doing our sitting practice. And if that doesn't work, then maybe a skillful means like metta might be helpful, or consciously removing the mind from the situation and bringing it to a more neutral object like the breath. And, you know, these methods can also be helpful for the other great efforts, preventing unwholesome states. You might apply restraint and avoidance. You know, if you find that you get irritable a lot, if you're tired, maybe try to get enough sleep so you don't get so irritable. If you find that spending too much time scrolling through the news feed on your phone makes you agitated and angry, maybe you can kind of limit that a bit. Look at what you actually need to be informed, but let that be enough. So in daily life, this avoidance and restraint can really be helpful, even when the difficult mind states have already arisen. You know, like it might be wise to remove yourself from a situation that feels like it's more than you can handle. For example, if you find yourself in a discussion that's really tending toward a really unpleasant argument, you might ask to just take a break, you know. Let's just step back and let go of this discussion for a while. Developing unwholesome states that have not yet arisen is something we can do by actively practicing mindfulness and concentration, practicing the Brahma Viharas, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. All of these are ways to help develop wholesome states. And we can maintain wholesome states by bringing mindfulness to and recognizing our wholesome qualities when they arise, appreciating their value, recognizing that we do experience these qualities, that they're not beyond us, and maintaining a regular meditation practice. Practicing ethical behavior also helps us to maintain and strengthen these wholesome qualities. And we can have more discussion about all of this in the coming weeks this month, but this is just some thoughts to get us started. Now, it's also important to think about the quality of our effort and make sure that it's well balanced. The Buddha compared wise effort to fine-tuning a musical instrument. And there's one sutta, which I think many of you have already heard, where he gives this instruction to one of his disciples, the Venerable Sona. Now, Sona was a very, very ardent practitioner, a kind of super ardent practitioner. And in fact, he did walking meditation until the soles of his feet were split and bleeding. And yet, somehow still, he didn't achieve full liberation. So he began to have doubts, and he thought to himself, here I am. I've been so persistent in my practice. I've tried so hard, but my mind still isn't really fully released. And he thought, you know, my family has enough wealth that I could just go back home, enjoy that wealth, and make merit by sharing it with others, make merit through my generosity. What if I just quit this rigorous training and went back to my lay life and just made merit by sharing my wealth? Now, does this sound familiar? Maybe not the part about making merit by sharing our wealth, but the part about feeling like, what am I even doing this for? I'm working so hard, but I'm not making any progress. Maybe I should just forget about this practice. How many of us have felt that way? Probably most of us have felt that way at one time or another. So as soon as the Buddha saw that Sona was thinking this way, and in the way of the Buddha, he could tell that he was thinking this without actually talking to him or anything. He came down and appeared right in front of Sona, and he asked him, just now as you were meditating here in seclusion, didn't you have this train of thought? I've been so persistent in my practice. I still haven't attained nirvana. So what if I quit this training and go back to lay life where I can make merit by sharing our family's wealth? And Sona says, yes, Lord. Yes. And the Buddha says, well, what do you think, Sona? Before, when you were a householder, were you skilled at playing the veena? This is like a kind of stringed instrument. And Sona said, yes, Lord. And the Buddha says, what do you think? When the strings of your veena were too taut, was your veena in tune and playable? No, Lord, says Sona. And what do you think? When the strings of your veena were too loose, was your veena in tune and playable? No, Lord, says Sona. And then the Buddha said, what do you think? When the strings of your veena were neither too taut or too loose, but tuned to be on right pitch, was your veena in tune and playable? Yes, Lord, says Sona. And so the Buddha says, in the same way, Sona, over-aroused persistence leads to restlessness, and overly slack persistence leads to laziness. So you should determine the right pitch for your persistence, attuned to that pitch, and pick up your theme from there. So after that, Sona determined to do that, to find the right pitch for his persistence. And in no long time, he reached and remained in the supreme goal of the holy life, where birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, and the task is done. There is nothing further for the sake of this world. And so the Venerable Sona became another of the Arhants. So this is a good story for us. We too need to find the right pitch and the right balance, and also add a healthy dose of wisdom to our effort, understanding that difficult mind states are bound to arise along with the beautiful ones, that none of them are permanent, and that their coming and going isn't all about us, and what is appearing in our mind doesn't define us. And so in this way, we continue to make gentle, persevering effort to true freedom, and really free ourselves from the bonds of greed, hatred, and delusion. So let's just sit for a moment. Thanks for your kind attention. And now we have some time for discussion. So I'd like to break you into small groups of three or four. You can have a little bit of time to talk about your thoughts on wise effort and your experiences in working with it, if you have some you would like to share. Maybe you'll want to talk about things that are especially confusing or challenging, or how you relate to this idea of the four wise efforts. And if you need to leave, have other things going on today, or just aren't in quite the mood for discussion, this is a good time to say goodbye. And we're really happy that you were able to join us for our sit and our talk. And for those of us who are still here, I will go ahead and break you into small groups. And as we do our discussion here, remembering our guidelines, allow everybody a chance to speak without interrupting them, and being kind, being thoughtful in any sharing that you do. Okay, so breakout rooms. Well, welcome back, everybody. Now we have a chance for us to spend a little bit of time sharing anything we would like to share from our group discussion, from our thoughts about wise effort, anything that you would like to share with the group. The floor is open, so you can raise your virtual hand. I think I can see everybody, so you can also raise your actual hand, and I ought to be able to see you. So, comments? Yes, Sherry.
I just want to share a comment about our process here that it's often that I mentioned this to my small group. It's often that I think about leaving before we break out into the breakout rooms. I'm sure that happens for many of us. And I'm not sure what that resistance is about, but it's always, always useful. And I'm always glad that I stayed, even if I don't know what I'm going to say or have anything to say, to hear concretely from other practitioners about their practice is as helpful as hearing a Dharma talk, even in just those few minutes. It's a very, very centering, and it provides that kind of community. It's very different than just having a teacher and following a teaching. It's really great. So thank you to all of you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think we all feel the same way, that there's a lot of value to be had in these small group discussions. Even though I too feel that resistance sometimes, there's always value to be had. Yes, Claire.
I agree with what Sherry just said. The small groups are so helpful, but I think one thing I've really come to appreciate here is that the small groups are safe. I've been in other sanghas and other breakout rooms where it's not so clear that we don't want advice from each other and we don't want correction and we don't want, all that stuff. And I feel that here it's a really safe place to share. That we understand the guidelines and we honor them. So thank you, Sangha.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yes, indeed. And thank all the Sangha, because it's you guys are the ones that really make those guidelines work so we can all feel safe. Thank you. Lauren.
Well, I wanted to thank Lyndall for the whole spread of your introduction. It was really, really great. And going through, examples of how to, the ways we can actually abandon and prevent, which are really hard, I think.
Yes, they are.
We were talking about that, these mind states that are so habitual. And so how do you do that? And your suggestions as to some ways to do that gave me some ideas, because I'm going to talk about it next week, and I was thinking of my own experience. And I'm just trying to see what I was, yeah, those methods for a variety of ways to abandon things. I mean, that is really helpful because these habits are so ingrained, and we habitually want to do it by willpower. Oh, I'll just get rid of this, and it doesn't work. So we really need those other ways of doing it. That's all I'll say, because I'm gonna but I just wanted to share that I really appreciated that, and I also agree with Sherry. I've been coming to these for 20 years, and I still, especially on Monday night, I'll think, oh, I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm so safe in my little house and just listening, I don't have to put myself out there. But I always, 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 it just makes me tear up, really. Right now, how much it makes a difference. So thank you, everybody.
Hearts, more hearts. Nikhil and Lillian, one of you, maybe both of you.
Thank you for your talk, Lyndall. I was wondering if you could state those four. Preventing was one. What were four things about the unwholesome mind states?
Oh, the four wise efforts?
Yes.
Yeah. preventing unwholesome mind states that haven't yet arisen from arising, abandoning unwholesome mind states that have already arisen, cultivating wholesome mind states that haven't arisen yet, and maintaining wholesome mind states that have already arisen. So that's the four. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, great. Great. Thank you.
Lyndall, could you say where the Sona Sutta, where, what number, how'd you find it? I loved that. I
can't remember the number. Okay.
But it's just S-O-N-A?
That's the name. It might be under the, I think I looked for it by looking at the, something about the, well, I can't.
I'll find it if it's just S-O-N-A. Thank you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or it might be about the tuning the instrument or something like that. Yeah. I forget exactly where I found it. Oh, Charlotte. Yeah. Please.
Well, Lyndall, I didn't realize that you were in bed with me. Oh, that was all. All the things you said, yes, that's what's going on at night. Yes, that's yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And it was very clarifying to hear you speak so clearly about all the things and then the things to do. Thank you very much. It was a wonderful talk. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm really glad it was helpful. And I thank the Buddha, because he had all these suggestions, you know. Really, thank you. Let's see. Well, maybe if there isn't anything else, I will go ahead and do our announcement.
Barry had put her hand up.
Oh, okay. Please.
I'm sorry, I hesitate because I already spoke. But I do have one last thing if we have a minute. In our group, there was some discussion of the word effort being something to overcome. And it's just slowly kind of coming to me, my response to that. And I come from a dance and movement background, and there's a wonderful theorist from the 20th century named Rudolf Laban, who created a system for thinking about movement. And one of the systems is called the effort space.
Mm-hmm.
And the efforts are like, they're like constellations of qualities. And the qualities are made up of components like lightness and directness and that sort of thing. So a punch is an effort, and a float is another effort. And so I wonder if I just wanted to offer this, that, you know, ways of kind of thinking about effort rather than looking for just a synonym for it, maybe this kind of way of kind of breaking it up in being creative about it is helpful to us. So it's a little adjacent to Dharma, I suppose, but I just wanted to offer that out. And I'll stick something in the chat that's like a chart that you can look at.
Interesting. I think that's a beautiful suggestion, because especially considering that there are many strategies that we can employ. So thinking of that, of our effort, that there can be many facets to that kind of effort. You know, sometimes it can be very focused and intense. Other times it can be very floating and yeah. So I think that's a really good suggestion. Thank you so much for that. Very nice.
Like qualities of being.
Qualities that we bring to our practice. Different qualities, depending on what's needed at the time. So, yeah, thank you. So, only a minute over. So for our last tiny minute, let's take a moment to sit together and dedicate the merit of our practice. That goodness that's generated when we come together, goodness that we can share with the rest of the world. And in these days, it's so much needed. So let's share the merit and share the aspiration with all beings to cultivate kindness, non-harming. Thanks so much for being here today. And even though we went a couple of minutes over our time, it was very nice to see you all. And